listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery. National speaker Timmery Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Chris Mueller is a national speaker, author, father of six, and is currently making a Catholic TV show for families as he travels speaking to over 10,000 people each year. Between Chris having over 18 years experience in Catholic lay ministry and Timmery's holding a master's degree in biblical theology, together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
So the other day I was switching our insurance. I just moved from working at the parish of St. Martha, and I'm now working for Everyday Catholic full time. And so I had to change insurance. And so I was transferring the kids' insurance, and it was really cute. The operator said, "Oh, so are we going to be doing two today?" And I said, No, we're going to be doing six. And she could not fathom it. It was just like, she stopped. She goes, "Oh my Lord." Like, and she's in the South someplace, so it made it much more fun. But "Oh my Lord." And she said, "I'm in my office right now. We couldn't have this conversation at home. I was kidding." She's like, "Oh, you got to climb up the telephone to have a phone call." But it was interesting. It just, the idea of a large family was just mind blowing to her.
You know, it's interesting to see people's reactions. Some of them are outright shock. Every now and again, you get a little bit of outrage. But a lot of the time, they're thinking, just how is that possible? And there's also excitement, I think, sometimes, that this is something I don't usually see. How is this done?
Yeah, it's interesting. When we were a four-kid family, people thought we were just a little eccentric. When we cruised to a five-kid family, people started visibly counting us as they approached. Now that we've got six kids, they think they just, again, it's... I think they're going to call Child Protective Services because they think the idea is that we're abusing our kids by having that many children. It's different. We are a unicorn. We are a fabled thing, you know, this big family.
How have we gotten to the point where most people think, "I will have my one, maybe two," and again, they hope for specifically one girl, one boy, done. That's how a lot of people think now. Well, it used to be that was kind of how it was, but we've fallen below our replacement level here in the United States. We're not even having two children per woman, because reality is per woman, we need to have a minimum of 2.1 babies being made and had, but we are seeing 1.8 today. So essentially, bottom line is, we're not replacing ourselves. And we've seen signs of this in Denmark, where they're actually having satire commercials encouraging couples to mate, work out together. It makes you, you know, build endorphins and be more attracted.
Yeah, it's really weird. And you go, "Well, what's the big deal? So we've got less people." But so many of our social programs, like, you know, our retirement programs, are built upon the idea that there are more people going into the system that will then support the other people. And if we're not growing, we can't sustain those things. And so we have a real crisis coming in where, you know, Social Security isn't going to be funded because there aren't workers to contribute to it. And we know that our population is aging. We're aging longer and longer. And so you've got people who are aging to be into their hundreds, and then there are no young people who are going to be contributing to that program, and so who's going to support it?
This is something demographers have been looking at for quite a while, and they've been giving us the warning signs that we're on the verge of a real crisis. The boomers are just beginning to retire. They're holding on a little bit longer as well to their jobs. And what we're seeing is that when we hit 2022 here in the United States, it's going to be less than 62% of Americans will be working, which means that that financial input that we need for Social Security is going to be going down. And so we're going to hit a real crisis where there's not enough financial funding for the boomers and on, because not only did the boomers not have enough children, but the next generations before that. And it's going to take time to really make up for the lack of people here in the United States.
You know, it's interesting. I was just talking with a business owner who has a business that deals with young kids. He does gymnastics lessons. And they've had a really great little run, because if you look demographically speaking, you have the boomers, this big generation, you have Gen X, it kind of recessed, but then you have the millennials, another big generation. What we're seeing is the millennials aren't having kids. I mean, they're just not having kids. And so he is actually starting to look forward and go, "Okay, what other business can I look into? Because in a couple years, this wave is going to crest and my business is going to dry up because there just aren't kids to take gymnastics lessons. I mean, that's crazy that he has to think that way, but he does because he knows his business is driven by this number of kids. And if they aren't there, they're not there.
Well, he's not the only one. Toys R Us is completely shutting down. If they didn't already over the last couple of weeks, I mean, maybe a good opportunity for sales. However, the fact that Toys R Us has shut down, I mean, that was a child's winter wonderland, but in toys. And, you know, it was interesting because I was talking to someone recently who's now ex-husband, who they never had children, has been working for Toys R Us, corporate Toys R Us, for years. And she was talking about how, you know, she feels bad for him. Not only has he lost his wife, but he's also lost his job at Toys R Us. And I'm sitting here thinking, and all this time he's lost fatherhood as well. And, you know, maybe that's part of the reason. There are people working within the toy industry who have never had children, don't plan on having children. And we have this anti-child mentality today that if anything, maybe we have one or two, but even then they're a burden.
Absolutely. You know, you look at why. Why do we have less kids? And we definitely know that women are waiting longer to have kids or waiting longer to get married. And I think we have to acknowledge we have so completely degraded the role of motherhood. Right. It's, you know, and I think a lot of women feel this pressure, like I have to go out and get a job and do these things and complete all these tasks, because if I don't, I'm somehow less than my contemporaries who did those things. Right. Or I can only have a couple kids because I have to, my career, I've got to stay focused on that career. And so you're having smaller families. So we can do this. And again, I'm not saying it's a problem with women working, but to degrade the role of motherhood is insane. Because, you know, like in our family, I say this all the time. My wife is the smarter of us. She's brilliant. She's amazing. Yeah. So the person who is the brighter is raising the next generation because it's a more important role. Does that make, like, it's like you want the best and the brightest doing that job because that's the future. Whereas I can go out and make money and I can go out and do things, but really, like, anybody can do that. Anybody can go get a job. Like, it takes someone really special, really talented, really extraordinary to raise extraordinary kids.
Well, and you don't have to downplay femininity or masculinity, either one of them, to see there's a complementarity, right?
Within the absolutely.
Home. You're using your strengths each in a different way to contribute and raise that family. And I think the downside for women is that from a young age, we are automatically put on this track to go to college. And I know every time people are probably going to say, oh, hold on, what is she saying? We cannot ignore the fact that we as women have a different biochemical makeup than men. We have the potential to have children, physically feed children, and continue to raise them in a way that men don't. And there's this difference between men and women that we have to continue to remember when we're talking about femininity, masculinity, and being in the workforce. And so, especially when we talk about, well, are you going to go to college? What kind of job do you want to have? We need to think about debt and how we're working
absolutely.
Into this.
Yeah, because if you just took out $200,000 in loans, the expectation is you're going to do something with the degree, right? And so if you get married and you say, you know, I want to stay home, well, you have to pay off a mortgage, right? And that means effectively, if you're going to try to be a one income household, which is rare, but it does happen, then that person has to pay off not only his loans, but then the wife's loans, then whatever mortgage is being in, and it becomes an untenable situation. So you don't have the choice to have children at the time. You have to try to delay children because you have to get out from underneath the economic mountain that you've put yourself underneath.
And so maybe you're a parent whose kids are already starting to look at colleges, universities, maybe they're in early high school, making sure they understand you have the ability to have children, and that is a beautiful and good thing. You have the ability to study anything you want, right? If you apply your mind to it and you have the proper skills to enter into that field. But you have to remember that at the end of the day, we have responsibilities for people. And that comes before our chosen career path, no matter who we think we're serving within that career.
Now, I think we also have to acknowledge that we have made marriage into some sort of mythical thing that it's, you have to find the perfect person. It has to be the perfect situation. You have to have everything straightened out before you can possibly get married. And so we're delaying it because, you got the economic mountain of college you got to pay for. You got to find the perfect person, all that good stuff. And the reality is marriage at its best is two imperfect people who need the grace of the sacrament, right? Mm-hmm. And like, again, my wife and I got married. We dated for 6 months. We got engaged. We got married a year later. We have a great marriage. It's not perfect, right? There's always going to be challenges. And the minute you get your life ready and perfect and just in order so you can have a kid or you can get married, you know what's going to happen? You're going to get married and you're going to have a kid, and that order is going to be wrecked because life isn't that way. Like, life isn't ordered perfectly. So if you're in a relationship, if you're in your 20s and you're in a relationship with someone who's marriageable, what are you waiting for? What perfect situation, what perfect storm have you created that you're saying, well, this has to happen. All these pieces have to fall into place before we could possibly consider this. No, you have to go with a mindset and understanding of the covenant that you're saying, if we do this, this is forever. And I am committed to loving you even when I don't like you at times. And we're going to work to make sure that we can love each other at all times. And in the situations where we don't, we're not giving up, right? And we're going to invite God to bring his grace into that situation to change me and to change you.
And what a beautiful element of the sacrament. I like where you said, even if I don't like you at times, right? Even if we maybe don't get along, well, there's something holding you there to that commitment. Versus when you don't get married, when you're just moving in together, when you are only dating, there's not that absolute commitment. There's not God entering into that relationship in the same way, right? At the same level that would happen if you were married. And so I think that we have to remember this idea of fidelity that has fallen so far away from our culture. Fidelity to family, fidelity to a spouse, fidelity to maybe you are not able to get married just yet, right? Maybe you are dating someone. It's taking a little longer. Not that there are ever the perfect circumstances, but maybe you have a legitimate reason why that's being delayed a little while. And recognizing, learning that element of fidelity, faithfulness, sacrificial love, and working through those challenging personality qualities that will always be there.
We're going to be talking more about this and about this GLAAD rating system for movies, how they're kind of push movies into representing reality in a way that's just not aligned with reality. More about that later here on Trending.
You'll also hear a little bit of a conversation about China's two-child policy and how they might be changing that down the road.
Chris and Timmery will be right back. Tweet them at C Mueller Tweets, spelled M-U-E-L-L-E-R, and at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
So we've been talking about declining birth rates in the United States and really kind of the cataclysm that's going to come with that economically and socially. China, on the other hand, has been aborting their society for some time and has just realized, oh, poop, we've got a real issue. And they're talking about relaxing their two-child policy.
You know, this is huge because China is recognizing there is a crisis in terms of the fact that there are not enough women out there for the men that are there. There is a social attitude that we've recognized a lot of men just can't get married because we do not have enough females here.
Yeah, and it is a major issue in China. And if you're not familiar with this, China has said for a long time, you can have one child, right? They had a one child policy. And so people would sex selectively say, well, we want a male child. And so they would abort their female children. And then China said, oh, no. Well, in some provinces, we'll allow a two child policy. And people would say, great. Well, we'll have one, see what happens. And then if they had a girl, the first child, if the second child was going to be a girl, they would abort the girl in hopes of having a boy. And so what they've done is they have completely imbalanced their population to a horrific degree. We're now, do you know the percentages? I don't know off the top of my head.
I don't have it right in front of me, but it is a huge, like, there are, the gap between men and women and the lack of women is so large. Like, there is a market for selling women in China because people need to purchase wives, essentially, is what it's come down to. Not only that, but there are so few women that they've even more so sexualized women as objects within that culture. But I have to come back for a second, Chris, to the fact that this two-child policy is false. It's still a one-child policy. Back in 2015, they caved to a tremendous amount of pressure, especially from the United States. Praise be our Lord for interceding and working on the hearts and minds of a lot of our American politicians to say, you know what, this one-child policy isn't okay. But their little accommodation is if in certain provinces and in certain cases, those certain cases are, you can have another child, only a second child, if both of the spouses come from families that only came from single child households. And so it's basically still putting qualifications for you to have more children. Not only that, Chris, we're not talking about the fact that you have to be married in order to have a child.
Yeah, I just saw that in this story we're talking about, and I I did not understand that. It was something I'd never really conceived of. It's illegal to have a child out of wedlock in China. And if you do, if you get pregnant out of wedlock, the Chinese government will then kill your baby.
Reggie Littlejohn, who runs Women's Rights Without Frontiers, an incredible organization. Go over, check it out. I've interacted with her a lot over the years on the China's one child policy and the work she's doing because the pro-life movement truly is underground there. They have to secretly save children. They have to save and hide women who are pregnant, who the government has determined shouldn't be pregnant. But if you are born as a child to a woman who is single, or if you are born as a child to a couple who didn't have that permission for you to be born, you have no legal rights. You have no right to marry. You have no ability to get a passport. You have no right to an education, no right to health care. You are truly, even though you are of the Chinese people, you were born and raised there, you are being raised in secrecy.
Right.
Because according to them, you shouldn't exist.
Right. And so essentially you're a foreigner in your own land. Like, you don't exist, or you have no rights in your own land. Yet, if you're not paying attention to China on the human rights front, it's a horrifying situation. It has been for a long time. But this is off our show notes. But China right now is implementing a policy where everyone's going to be given a reliability rating based on their online habits. Alibaba is one of the companies that's implementing this, and so they're getting people to sign up for voluntarily right now. And you can, if you're reliable, quote unquote, then you can get like a number of credits, and then you can say, oh, I'm this, and then that gives you like discounts on certain things. But in 2020, everyone has to register for it. And so if you're deemed to be unreliable, it means you can't get loans, or you can't, rent a car, or you can't do various things based on your online stuff. China's also implementing lifetime facial tracking. We talked about that at one point, where they can know where everyone is at all times. So say you're gathering for an underground mass. Well, they can start by facial tracking you throughout the city. They can know when you're congregating with different people. They can check your reliability rating, and they can see if maybe you have a child out of wedlock, because now they're tracking everyone's facial features. It's a horrifying picture of Big Brother, right? And again, as an American, as a Westerner, I have to wonder, what's my culpability because I'm funding it?
Right. I mean, think about all of the goods that we are buying from China, giving into the way they do business, the way their business allows them to operate. Chris, this monitoring media wise of the people in China is not surprising to me, and here's why. I've had the opportunity to work with some religious sisters who are part of the underground pro-life movement in China. And one of the sisters was sharing with me that she actually, when they're working there, they had an underground, basically crisis pregnancy maternity home in an apartment in a building. Again, when I say underground, it's a secret. They have to try and hide what's happening. The nuns are not allowed to wear their habits. But what happens is, in China, they have a lot of huge buildings, right? Apartment complexes. Well, the lowest floor, essentially, where you're coming in and out of to get to your home, to your apartment, those people are kind of the watchdogs. They're being paid. They have good relationships with the family planning authorities, basically to be the people who are telling on you, yeah, I suspect this woman might be pregnant, or something weird's going on. They might be having a secret mass. They've been monitored by their peers for years in China because they want to be in good favor with the government. But now this is a whole new level, that there is no level of secrecy. Your camera anytime could be monitoring what you're doing. Like, I can't imagine what that's like. And this is where we get to the real crisis, because although one child policy, two child policy, possibly no restrictions coming up will happen for married couples only, what has already happened to their mindset and where their minds are at this point with children?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I wish this was just China as far as this children thing is concerned. What we're seeing is in the West or in Japan, where we're killing our societies just as quickly, but we're doing it voluntarily. So in some respects, it's more horrific in the West. In China, at least, the government's mandating it. In Japan, they're choosing it. In the United States, we're choosing it. We've got the choice and we're making it anyway. But yeah, children are seen in a different way. You either end up having one of two things: children worship, right? Where, because they're so rare, they're just kind of run amok. Or two, they're just seen as a tremendous inconvenience. Like, when I take my kids to the zoo, it's like people don't think we should be there because we're inconveniencing their young adult dates, right? It's a zoo, right? It's a place for kids. And so, yeah, my kid, I tell my kids, use your elbows, get up on the glass, look at that gorilla. You know, right? Because this is for you. This is not for them to go flirt. This is for you to see gorillas.
So you can tell your kids to get in the way?
Oh, yeah. Use your elbows. Use your elbows.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm that dad. I tell you what, man.
You think the sun shines
if
out of your children's bums.
If you're a 30-year-old guy up against a glass and you won't let a 2-year-old by, then you don't, yes. You know.
Okay, that's different. That's I get that. If they're not moving out of the way, they've had their time to look around.
Right.
I get that. I thought you were saying that's your right, first and foremost. You're supposed to be up there.
Just take a tip from the Italian nuns in Rome and get to the front.
Man, the Italian nuns in general, I can't believe it. When I was there in Europe, I remember for the different people masses, man, those nuns were feisty. They were going to be in front.
Oh, yeah. No, they don't mess around.
No.
They do not mess around.
One of my favorite moments, just kind of nostalgia back to Rome. I remember it was the very first Palm Sunday Mass Pope Francis had ever celebrated. And there were some nuns that had come from Spain for the Mass. They were so excited. And the sister was so excited. She was hopping up and down. And we were just the traffic bumping back and forth between each other, barely room to move. And it was funny because the sister in front of me was so excited. She grabbed the backpack of the one in front of her and was shaking the backpack back and forth. But the nun in front of her thought it was the crowd moving her back and forth. And this nun's just letting out all of her exertion, shaking up the sister as she's trying to walk.
That's awesome.
It was great. You know, China, we've got to pray for what's happening in China. If you know anyone maybe working underground pro-life Catholic movement in China, because there are people out there, please do anything you can. It might even be handing them money to take back, just extra resources to feed that woman who's having to hide for the next 6 months because she's pregnant. Because you guys, I could tell you stories that would just make your stomachs turn. And I think that what I see coming out of China, there are moments where I can't talk about it because people look at it and they think that is just absolutely insane. It is inhumane. That is what is happening. And without getting as graphic as it could be on air, I want you to recognize that and find ways like supporting Women's Rights Without Frontiers financially. Maybe even just spreading the word about their organization if you can't give $5.
Yeah, and also I think, you know, we have to be cognizant of how our money is being used. Mm. So if you're looking, if you're buying goods, you know they're being made in China, and that's just something that happens, maybe reach out to those manufacturers and say, hey, is there any other way we can do this? Reach out to your legislators and say, hey, we need to really look at the way we're dealing with this country because the human rights violations are happening there. We're funding those, and we have to be cognizant of that. And it's very hard to get untangled from China in the United States today, but can you start moving away, or can you start putting pressure on these companies to start demanding these human rights violations stop?
You know, there's a lot of pride in buying American-made things, but maybe one of the reasons you can get on the bandwagon of being proud with the types of places you are buying things from is by not purchasing from China. It's difficult, but you can start to do it a little bit at a time just by paying attention, right? These little ways we can make a change.
You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Some of you may remember back in 2016 when I was still doing Hearts and Minds radio show with my old co-host Trent Horn, we kind of blew the whistle on the GLAAD pressure on Hollywood in the media industry. So GLAAD, G-L-A-A-D, stands for Gay Lesbian Alliance Against basically defamation. Or defecation, sorry, of character.
Defamation, and not defecation. Defecation is something totally different.
Defecation. Oh my gosh, I wrote defecation right here on my notes. That's why I'm like stumbling over the D. Those are great moments when you're trying to read something. Oh, that was great. So basically, it stands for that idea that we need more characters in movies that are gay, lesbian, transgender, queer, so forth, whatever GQTW you want to add on there. And basically we learned that what's happening is there's a tremendous amount of pressure on Hollywood and on these different movie makers, whether it's Disney, whether it's Warner Brothers, to have a certain quota of characters in their movies. And if they don't, they are just absolutely publicly shamed.
Yeah, they're policies. They want to see that their 20% of annual major studio films by 2021 have LGBTQ characters in it. And by by 50% by 2024. LGBTQ. And my question is, how many letters will be added to LGBTQ by that point?
Well, it technically is LGBTQ plus, just to be polite, but man, we
didn't
could
know
go
they'd
on.
Thrown on the plus.
It's been plus for a while. I finally just decided to ignore it because I just can't keep adding on letters. And I type it so many times because you hear it often on the show here.
You know, it's interesting. I had one of my students was applying for the UC system for schools, and he was running through with me all of the different ways you can identify. And you definitely need the plus because LGBTQ is not going to cover it.
Especially according to Facebook, there are far too many supposed genders. I'm sorry, the anatomy is either male or female. Very rare chromosomal differences or ambiguity in the genitalia. And in that case, you check the chromosomes. Bottom line, and when there are rare circumstances, very rare, where those confusing, ambiguous genitalia take place, we are supposed to handle those as such, rather than just creating this basket case of issues and pressure on Hollywood. Like, yeah. I just can't understand it, Chris.
Well, the frustrating thing with these percentages is they're not reflective of reality. You know, those people dealing with these kind of, whether it be same-sex attraction or transgenderism, we're talking, what, like 2% of the population, studies have shown? Right? So a small, small fraction of the population, but 50% of films have to include characters? That's just, it's just, it's disproportionate, right? And so essentially, you know, it gives a really slanted view of reality. And so, so GLAAD's upset. They're saying that enough Marvel films aren't, you know, and I'm going to say Marvel, but that not enough films are doing this, are displaying these type of characters.
Well, that's getting specifically to it. GLAAD is upset with Marvel and DC because in their movies, not necessarily on the TV screen with, you know, weekly shows, they're saying you guys have not been a part of our agenda. And they're incredibly upset, especially because Wonder Woman wasn't bisexual.
That is so frustrating to me.
You know, here we are. It was a moment to have this female superhero. It was a big deal, right? This heroine, I think that a lot of people were really excited. I was nervous it was going to be overdone on the pro-woman side because we want women, but we also don't want to downplay men. And they did a pretty good job of having that balance at the same time as Wonder Woman was suspicious of men because she lived with all women.
Right.
You know, so throwing that out there, though, imagine if they didn't make her character bi. They're saying this would be a great example for her, you know, to have these options to, you know, she's all about freedom. Well, here's freedom on your sexuality, too. That would change the movie.
Absolutely. But here's the thing. Wonder Woman, in her 76-year history, has always been portrayed, or majority of the time has been portrayed, as a straight woman. In 2016, there was one storyline that portrayed her not as bi, as bisexual. But so we're supposed to change the entire thing because of that. It's so clearly agenda-driven. It's interesting to me, we were just talking about China, that one of the reasons they think the studios refuse to do this on their major blockbusters is they want the Chinese market. And the Chinese government has said, nope, can't show them, not going to do it.
Isn't that interesting? And, you know, not that we favor the Chinese government in any way, really, but
no,
really don't. But there are actually a lot of other governments that have restrictions on a certain level of pornography being exposed on TV and certain levels of homosexual interaction. They're saying no. And in some ways, maybe that's a good thing, you know, but here's this blatant example that basically Hollywood's doing it not because that's what they think is right, but they're doing it because this is what they're in the business of. And so they just put those local shows in the United States and they just pepper them with heterosexual interactions, right? And then they add in the deep-seated homosexual interactions and then swing back and forth as if, okay, we can flirt with this person this day and this person of this sex another day. It's gotten to the point where Chris and I have been talking for the last couple months saying, we're almost at that breaking point where we can't watch these shows at all anymore.
Oh, I don't think it's almost. I think the CW shows, for the most part, are so bad. See, the CW does most of DC's television, right? So if you're looking at Wonder Woman, that's not a TV show, but Supergirl, The Flash, Black Lightning, Arrow, Legends of, you know, the past or tomorrow, whatever it is. It's so agenda driven. Like they just did a mashup, I think it was last season, with all those shows, and they were in like a concentration camp type thing. And there's people with different like markings, like a star, a triangle, and the character looks over and she goes, and he says, like, what'd you do, man? And he's got the triangle. He goes, I love the wrong person. Right. And it was just, and it was so clearly, and again, this is horrific because the Nazis actually did that, right? That was actually a situation where people were being put in camps and being made to wear pink triangles, right? To say that's modern day America or even to apply it is horrific. Like, there's not even, no one's arguing. Like, here's the reality. Like, we as Catholics, we're not arguing that people who say they have same-sex attraction or living in a gay lifestyle, we're not arguing that they should be in any way punished or put in jail.
We have less rights.
No, we want to love them and to bring them to the fullness of truth. But we don't want to have this, that their lifestyle is normal and we have to teach it to our kids and our kids have to have that choice. We don't want to have that shoved down our throat. And this is what's happening. And GLAAD is what they're doing is they're saying, we want to normalize this so that if you're a person of traditional beliefs, like we are as Catholics, you're going to seem like bigots. And that's basically what the positioning they're doing.
Well, and GLAAD stands against defamation. And you look at this, and I'm sorry, but they're defaming the characters of people with same-sex attraction by the way they are forcing not just, oh, hi, I'm gay, and they're living the character out, but what they're doing is they're reducing those characters to their same-sex attraction. And that's what I have a real problem with. When you reduce someone to their sexual orientation, sexual attraction, that is just so inappropriate. And I feel like they've taken a lot of the characters who they have identifying as gay and turned the majority of their speaking roles into homosexual flirtation and not even, oh, I'm great at what I do, or this is a conversation I'm having. Everything's reduced to innuendo about that gay lifestyle.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm going to say as a parent looking at the superhero genre, which I very much enjoy personally, I think they've gone too far. I think we're seeing the lifestyle of Iron Man. It's not implied. It's shown. The language is just coarse and profane. Right. And so as a dad, I can't watch these movies with my kids unless I use a service like Clearplay, where we were using it with Amazon. We're adding on. So it's taking out that language. It's taking out the sexual innuendo. It's taking out the objectionable sexual content or the graphic violence. So now it's a family-friendly film the way it should have been made. Like, you know, and so I would like Disney to take a couple steps back and say, hey, no. I want five-year-olds to come up and enjoy this with theirs. Let's get a little more clever and a little less crude so we can make it something where a kindergartner can go with his dad or a third grader can go with his dad and everybody's going to enjoy it.
Well, you know what's interesting, though, is that the comic book world of the series of comic books, last year they had started to really push some of the gay agenda within the comic books. Well, guess what? It wasn't successful within that industry. So you know what happened? The three comic books that Marvel was praised for by GLAAD for having these characters in, Marvel canceled because it wasn't a good business decision.
Right.
And last year on Trending, we reported a ton about how a lot of the gay characters that were being pushed into Marvel, Disney was pulling back on because people were watching less. And so I think that you and I have a responsibility, even though we love the DC comic Marvel world, that there are shows we just can't watch anymore.
You know, and you look at the TV positioning and you see how DC is really pushing this agenda on the CW, and they're pushing it for teens, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of the 18 to 25 demographic. Well, Madison Avenue shows that if you can get someone to buy a product and commit to a product in 18 to 25, they'll likely be a lifetime user. So why are they pushing it for teen programming? Because they're trying to influence the rest of that person's life. So parents, as we're with our kids, we have to say, whoa, teen program, we can't just let you just go burn your minds with this. We need to sit and watch it. And when stuff comes up that's objectionable or that's contrary to our beliefs, we need to have the discussion and we need to weigh out whether or not this is appropriate in our home. I think a lot of the CW stuff, you'd say, yeah, I can't justify this for my kids. Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things that BBC has gone about to remaking is Little Women, right? That classic story, that classic book that many of us grew up reading the story and then also seeing the movie as well. Well, they've remade it into a 3-part series. And what's interesting about Little Women is that character on Little Women. So Little Women, what we've seen in the remake of it is the story historically, if you look at the main character, Joe, Chris, that main character is actually kind of a little boyish, right? She, you know, chooses to dress differently at times, wear pants at times in the remake of it at one point. Now this version, she is wearing dresses, but she talks about not liking certain emotions. Well, if I was a man, we wouldn't respond this way. And she makes these blatant statements. And it was really interesting seeing the remake of it because I felt like they tried to play that up a tidbit more than before.
Right.
Well, at the same time, and keeping to the historical context of the clothing, because that's what BBC is really good at. The clothing. thing, what's going on. So I thought it was interesting to see even there, BBC has tried so hard, especially with some of the other movies, to implement these LGBTQ characters at times.
Yeah, it's like they're trying so hard. And again, it's not reflective of reality. And I think that's where I really have issue with this one. And number of reasons I have issue with it.
So you'll hear more on trending in our last segment. We're going to be talking a little bit more about children and the priesthood. And what about women in the priesthood? We'll be right back.
You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
When I was in grad school, I had another student who was a woman, and she was really struggling with the fact that she could not become a priest. And we were in a biblical theology program, a good Orthodox university, John Paul the Great Catholic University. And she really grappled with that throughout the master's program and eventually came into a solid understanding that the priesthood was implemented by Christ, given to men, and that Our Lady, who had one of the most fundamental roles in Christianity and the upraising of Christ, that if Christ in some ways didn't choose to have Our Lady be a priest, that says something about what he was instituting in the priesthood. And today, you know, there's this debate, Chris, that we have to have female priests. The Anglicans have given into this. Other different forms of religion have given into female ministers. But this is something that will never change in the Catholic Church.
Right. And that's something I think that is important to point out, that the Catholic Church, Pope John Paul II, kind of it didn't make it up, but he spoke definitively to affirm that this is a truth of our faith. Like, it doesn't change. You know. And you look at the role of the priest in the Mass, right?
Yeah.
And during the consecration, the priest, he stands in persona Christi, in the person of Christ. Hey, guys, Jesus was a dude. You can't have it that, it just doesn't work both ways. You can't have him be in persona Christi but a woman, because then you've got a very weird persona happening.
It doesn't fit. It just like sex doesn't work that way, right? Two men together, two women together, pretending to be a man doesn't work. You're in persona Christi. You are acting as the body, blood, and soul of Christ in that moment. He is working through you and to bring about the sacrament. And this is something we can't forget, that while not only did Jesus institute the priesthood with all men, right? He spoke. That was his decision on how he would have the priesthood be. And, you know, taking it a little step past that, it's important to remember that we have to regulate and maintain what Christ has taught moving forward without stepping away from that living tradition.
Now, I think the temptation is to say, well, culturally at the time, it was a very male-dominated society. It was a patriarchy, Chris, and that was the problem. But you have to look at Jesus' life. Jesus wasn't really concerned with the social norms. Like, he talks to the woman at the well, right? Like, he breaks all social boundaries. She talks to a woman alone, right?
Which isn't done in that context. Like, I'm sorry to interrupt
you
there, but people don't understand that you would not be standing alone in a remote area with a woman.
Right. It just would not happen. And then she's a Samaritan, right? So he breaks those things. So there's that, like Jesus does. You look at the woman with the issue of hemorrhaging, right? She had the mm-hmm. she had the bleeding for years and years and years. He recognizes her publicly, you know, and breaks. He's not concerned with the patriarchy, guys. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just not something that's holding Jesus to be bound. You look at the evidence of the early church. We see very prominent women in the early church. This idea that, oh, no, it's a male-dominated society, yeah, that doesn't really apply. You know, Christianity kind of breaks all those rules. However, we do see that the priesthood is something that is conferred upon men, and there's a reason why. And again, it's persona Christi. We're these guys who are showing us the visible face of Christ, right?
Well, and when you're talking about him being in persona Christi, we have to remember what's happening right in that moment is a sacrament, right? So whether it's the sacrament of reconciliation, the sacrament of the Eucharist, right? And the calling down and the transubstantiation for Christ to be present in the Eucharist given to you. What's happening is there is a substance for that sacrament that has to be there. And The priest is part of the substance there in the transubstantiation. He is there, the person of Christ, allowing for that change of the bread and wine to change into the body and blood of Christ. So we can't just suddenly take out part of what physically makes up that sacrament, that sacrifice that the priest is showing. And I gotta say, man, Chris, we have to come back to the fact that Our Lady spent more time with Jesus than any other person on this earth. She reared him. She was there with him when he was with the apostles. A lot of the time, if you read in the story, she is there with them, right? And yet he did not ordain her a priest. He did not call her a apostle, part of the 12. She had a very special role, and we have to turn and look to the Blessed Virgin Mary. And I love looking a lot of the different orders, because the orders turn to Mary to help inform them on their priesthood. Because Mary was there forming Christ in his priesthood.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I go back to the role of women in the Gospels. Who did Jesus first appear to after his resurrection?
Right.
Who gave the news to the apostles? A woman, right? Like, and so again, this idea, it's just the patriarchy. It's just dominated. It's just blah, blah, blah. It's social structures. No, it was a choice. I think we have to address this idea of equal value means everything's the same. Mm-mm. And it's not. No two people are exactly the same, right? And to say that men and women are exactly the same is just a fallacy. It's just not true. It doesn't mean we're not co-equal, but we're not the same.
You know, this has been in the news a lot over the past week about, wow, the church has actually reinitiated saying yet again, Cardinal Ladaria actually said from the Congregation of Faith that this decision is done with. We already know the living tradition, the reaffirmation from JP2, who's affirmed the tradition of 2,000 years, that's there. It won't change. And I'm just letting you know that JP2 made it very clear we have no authority whatsoever to change this matter. And so you can put up as much of a stink as you want about women in the priesthood. But that whole idea, Chris, that you came and hit on really clearly is that just because there's equality doesn't equal sameness. And, you know, take a math equation, for example, right? 2 + 2 can equal 4, but so does 3 + 1. And they look different, but they both add up to the same thing. There's this level of equality. There's this level of balance on either side of the equation. And when we talk about femininity and masculinity, we have to turn back to this complementarity that at the end of the day, no matter what you want to say, I'm sorry, I don't have male parts. He doesn't have female parts. And that very biochemical makeup impacts the way our emotions, the way our brain, the way our daily body changes. I mean, just for women alone, our hormonal makeup changes us every single day.
Yeah. And again, you know, it's hard for moderns to understand, but women can't be fathers, right? And there's something inherent in the role that is, there's a fatherhood that's lived out in it. It's an example of our Lord's fatherhood of us. Like, and that's something God chose to exhibit. God chose to show in the priesthood.
So before we end here, I want to talk just a little bit more about children and why children aren't behaving. And, you know, we could talk a lot actually about the fact that we're discussing this right up against fatherhood. I think because there's this lack of fatherhood that impacts the way children are interacting. But one of the big things we've got to talk about is children are misbehaving because we're spending a whole lot of time reacting to them when things go wrong rather than responding to them.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I think we've designed this perfect little world that kids are supposed to live in. And kids don't live in perfect little worlds. They break them. And my house is a testament to that, right? And so, yeah, we're reacting to what they're doing, all their precious little needs, when the reality is that we just need to be living with them. We need to be bringing them into our lives, not having a little life, the child worship that goes on today, where everything is surround like our little precious puffins can't ride in the front seat because it's too dangerous, so they ride in the back seat, which again, I understand, it's a safety thing, but we've become chauffeurs rather than parents.
Right, and I think that there's two lines of this. On one end, we've overly focused on the child, and on the other end, we're upset because they disrupt our lifestyle. And so there's this balance of, well, which one are you going to choose? And unfortunately, it's very rare anymore to see people who go, this is a family. And each family member has an equal level of dignity, right? A equal level of responsibility according to their age and capability, right?
Right.
So giving that child the responsibility that they should have to grow as a human being.
You know, we are, and my kids aren't perfect. I'll be the first to say that. They're wonderful, they're not perfect. But people regularly comment on how well-behaved they are when we're out, right? Mm-hmm. And part of that is because we've raised them with responsibility. We've raised them with expectation. You know, when we, after dinner every night, kids have chores. They've got things they have to do. You know, the bigs do things that are age-appropriate for them. The little ones have things that are appropriate to them. You know, our kindergartner has chores. He feeds and waters the dog. Right. I mean, that's a chore. He helps clear the table. He helps you. And so he has responsibility. And what we what the reality is, when you have responsibility, that grounds you. You then you don't walk around like everyone's here to take care of all of your needs. So you're less likely to have a tantrum in the supermarket because you realize the center of the universe is not you.
My little brother, I remember when my mom really started focusing with him on making eye contact and always shaking people's hands. And it's been amazing to me to see the level of responsibility he has taken. We could be in a context and you're meeting someone new, but it's not one of those moments you really have to stop and interact. But he is so polite. He looks a person in the eyes, shakes their hand, and really takes a moment to interact with them. And it's been amazing to see the number of doors that have opened up for him, and even friendships that have developed with older mentors because he's polite and he has that sense of responsibility toward others.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is if we want our kids to behave, we have to invest in them and we have to give them opportunities and responsibilities. They want that, they'll flourish in that.
This has been Trending with Chris and Timmery. To learn more about Chris Mueller or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak at your upcoming event, visit everydaycatholic.com or timmery.com.